accession number 26560, Reel 2.
Mr. Nicol, Reel 2, we're talking about your time from January 1951 at Mearney Barracks with the East Anglian Brigade Group Training Centre. And we looked at the accommodation. What I'd like to do now is look at a typical day's training. It sort of picks up a lot of different elements of your training. So what time would you get up in the morning, roughly?
I would think Reveille would be about 6:15. Breakfast... perhaps at 8 o'clock.
So what were you doing in the interval?
Getting yourself ready, you know, washing, shaving, which was obviously a must.
Were you shaving at 18?
They made you shave, yeah. Yes, but I was sort of at that age then when I really perhaps needed to shave every other day, but, you know, I used to shave daily.
Now, what was the food like? I mean, we'll deal with all the meals. You come from your home. What did you think of army food? Breakfast, dinner, tea, whatever?
Well, quality not very good. Not enough of it. At the age of 18, I could eat like a horse, and I was always hungry.
So what was wrong with the quality? I mean, what was...
Well, it was sort of mass-feeding quality, if you like. You took your plate and you went along a line, and it was sort of dropped on your plate, as it were, you know. And at the end, you got usually got sort of two rounds of bread with a knob of butter or margarine, I can't just remember, and a sort of a dollop of jam. That was sort of the drill, if you know what I mean. A mug of tea from again at the end, so it was not self-service, but you actually went up and got served yourself, you know.
Not enough,
and obviously was enough because we trained hard on it, and I think the army had got the sort of the balanced diet thing out pretty well, but I was always hungry, and I think most of the young. You know, the guys were always hungry, really.
Now, after breakfast, what would the first sessions be? I mean,
usually a drill parade.
Well, let's look at drill. You've done a bit of drill, but not much. How did you take to drill?
Well, I'd been in the cadets, so most of the sort of foot drill I'd done before. The one thing that really amused me, we had to shout out numbers when we were drilling, you know. 1, 2, 3, 4, one, and so on, you know. But after a while, you got it right. And you've got to remember that when you sort of take in a platoon of lads from different walks of life, you got some that were quicker than others and some that were very much slower than others. You get the poor bloke to try and swing his right arm with his right leg and stuff like that, you know. And they obviously had to be sort of knocked into shape. And we were knocked into shape. And for the 6 weeks, we used to drill every morning. And then we do weapon training.
Hang on. Did you understand the point of drill then? You might do now, but did you understand then why you had to do so much drill?
Well, I don't think I really put much understanding towards it. I mean, it was something you had to do, and that was it. You know, it's something the army did. So you accepted it, you know. It sort of didn't strike me as being strange or anything. I mean, I thought it was just for discipline, really. And
it didn't bore you or particularly, or
no,
you didn't react against it at all.
No, I quite liked it actually.
What did you like about it?
The precision of it, you know, the doing things right in the right time, and trying to be smart, I suppose, really. Yeah.
Now, say the weapons training sessions. Where would you start there?
Well. In the barrack room, usually, or in a training shed. And this would be, for instance, the rifle, stripping the rifle, how to keep it clean.
How did you keep it clean?
How did we keep it clean? Well, with a pull through for the barrel and cloth and that, you know, and generally keeping it clean. The ammunition it fired, loading the magazines, and general training on the rifle and the Bren gun. And because with the Bren gun, you go through all the stoppages and all the remedies, and I remember that quite well.
I mean, how were you? Did you get on the range with the rifle?
Later on, but, you know, this sort of came through the first. You've got to appreciate that the first training period was 6 weeks, which was square bashing and general sort of weapon training and going out on a few overnight schemes.
But you didn't fire the weapons?
Towards the end of the 6 weeks, yes, we did.
What were you like as a shot?
Well, to start off with, we started on 2.2 rifles on an indoor range. And I think this was just to get the feel of a weapon and the discipline that you have to go through on a range, you know, that you don't wave it around and stuff like that. What sort of shot was I? Well, I suppose pretty fair, I suppose, really. I'm sort of... I did get up to a marksman at one stage, but... I suppose in all...
I mean, not that many did that. What made you a decent shot, do you think? Eyesight, reactions, what, you know?
Just wanted to do things well, I think. I don't know.
Now, what about the Bren gun? What did you think of that?
What did I think of the Bren gun? Well, I thought at that stage, I thought it was a terrific weapon, you know. Yeah, I really did.
Why? What was so good about it?
Well, you know, it was an automatic, you know, you pull the trigger and, you know, and you got rid of a lot of bullets sort of thing. You imagine yourself sort of firing it from the hip and that, you know, as a lad of 18 and that. And I think that was the exciting thing about the Bren gun. And that it was a well-used weapon and well thought of.
And what was it like to fire on the range?
What, a Bren gun? Easy. Yeah.
Accurate?
Well, yeah. Reasonably accurate. Not as accurate as a rifle. Perhaps that may have been attitude, that if you're behind it, pulling the trigger, you know you've got more than one shot going out, you're going to get there in the end, you know. But with a rifle, I think you... You're a bit more precise, yeah.
And any other weapons? The Sten, were you introduced to that?
Yes, we were introduced to the Sten gun.
What do you think of that?
Well, I thought it was an atrocious weapon until I went to Korea.
Now, why did you think it was atrocious?
Well, it was crude. And it was sort of cobbled together during the war, I believe, as a sort of a very sort of a quick built gun, you know, really. It was quite crude, I thought. But sort of having been in engineering, I couldn't really see anything much engineered about it. That was until I went to Korea, and then...
We'll come to why, yeah, you liked it then. Were you aware of its inaccuracy and things like that at the time, you know, before you went to Korea? And
yes.
The fact it would,
yes,
go off if you dropped it?
Yes. Yeah, I was aware of all that, yeah.
They actually told you, because sometimes they didn't warn troops that it
would go yes,
off.
They did. We had there was a locking pin that it was stressed that we must use, you know. This was a lock spring, well, it was a pin that went into a hole in the main body of the gun that locked it off, you know. And it was stressed that we always use that. It was like a safety.
Now, what other weapons? Hand grenades?
Yes, we did hand grenades. Throwing hand grenades into a grenade pit. I think we got to throw one each or something like that, you know.
Were you taught to fuse it and the rest of it?
Yes, yeah, and we were taught how many seconds, because there were different fuses, you know, how many seconds each fuse was, and how to strip it, how to, you know, fuse it, put the detonator in, and generally sort of know a bit about it, you know.
What about the throwing technique? Because it's a special technique, isn't it?
Well, long arm sort of overhead, yeah, yeah.
Like a cricket.
That's right, yeah.
Now, what I missed out, bayonet. I mean, were they still giving you much bayonet training?
Yeah, we had, you know, the sacks of straw strung up on sort of a framework which we had to sort of charge, and they taught you how to use the rifle with a bayonet.
In what way? What was the
Well, how to hold it.
How would you hold it?
Well, by the stock and halfway up the barrel, you know, pretty tightly, you know, thinking in terms of you're going to shove it in somebody, you know. And they also taught you, if you stabbed anything on the ground, which foot to put out with the bayonet, because you can quite easily stab yourself in the foot if you don't use the right foot. I remember that, you know.
Which foot was it?
You stabbed with your right foot, and so that you actually couldn't stab your foot, or the chances were you wouldn't stab your foot.
And did you think the bayonet was a serious weapon? I mean...
No, I thought it was a serious weapon, and I hope you'd never have to use it, to be honest with you.
Were they still encouraging you to do all the shouting when you did the charge?
Oh, yes, you had the sort of charge bit of feeling, as it were.
What about mortars? The 2-inch mortar, perhaps, not the 3-inch, I suppose.
The 2-inch mortar we didn't touch in the first 6 weeks. But after 6 weeks, training went on to a further 10 weeks.
I'll come back to that and pick it up then. Now, anything else you got in the first 6 weeks in the weapons training line?
No, not that I can think of.
No Piat, that would be later. The Piat would be later, I presume.
The Piat was going out of fashion. We were told about the Piat. Everyone dreaded firing it because it apparently had a hell of a recoil on it, and we got to see one, but we never did fire one. So we knew a little about the Piat, but not very much.
Now, what about, you know, the other session you mentioned would be tactical exercise or schemes, night schemes, day schemes.
Yes.
What sort of thing were you doing?
Well, I suppose it was done to get us to sleep out under canvas or under whatever.
What would a typical night exercise be like?
Do you know, I can't really remember. Usually going up about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, being fed about 9 o'clock. Something dropped into your mess tins and you didn't really recognise what it was, you know. And then doing the scheme, whatever it might be, until morning.
How realistic were the exercises?
Well, at the time, you really don't know how realistic they are. Later on, when you sort of went on active service, I suppose some of that training probably did come in useful. But that's arguable, really.
So, now other parts of training, were you, what about things like guard duties? Were you...
Well, we had...
Or trained in them?
Yeah, and in Colchester, they had a guard thing that was called a fire picket. And you were sort of called up that you were on fire picket on a certain day, and I suppose about 8 of you had to turn out on the square to be inspected by an officer, and one of that 8 or 9 okay, was called a stickman. He was presumably the smartest guy on parade, and he got off going on picket, but then he had to sort of collect up all the other fire picket guys' bedding and take down to the guard room, because they did a sort of a 2-on-4 off or something like that, you know. So I did a fire picket, although...
And were you looking for fire, or was it more a guard, or was it...
But it was, they had pick handles, and they used to sort of walk round and anything, I suppose, really. Never having done it, I wasn't at the briefing when they... before they went on, because I got stickman, so, you know, I was sort of the lucky one, really. And then in the morning, you had to go and bring all the bedding back, you know, and that was the job of the stickman. And they patrolled, I think, 2-on-4 off, all over the camp, and I suppose looked for anything.
Now, getting the stickman's not that easy. How did you prepare generally for kit inspections, your uniform? You know all this, what level of bull were they on?
Well, we were taught how to... For a start off, I'll go back to when we joined up. On the Saturday morning, we had to go and collect all our webbing equipment. And excuse me. And from there, we went to have our jabs, which was a TAB and two others sort of in the forearms. We were then given the rest of the weekend off. And in that time, we had to clean Blanco and clean our webbing. Now, I don't know if you've heard anything about the TAB injections.
Well, tell us about that. We'll go on to the Blanco. While we're on the TAB, what effect did it have on you?
Well, your arm used to swell up. Normally, you get a big lump under the arm, right? And you didn't want to move your arm. But you'd also got your Blanco in and brasses to do before Monday morning. It tended to give some people a fever. Some of the lads just got into bed and sweated and shook, you know, for 2 or 3 hours. I was lucky. I had the pain, but at least I could Blanco and do the brasses before Monday morning.
Now, people don't know what Blanco is now. I mean, because, you know... Yeah. What was Blanco? What was Blanco?
Well, Blanco was like a... Well, I suppose you'd call it like a block of chalk in different colours. Now, we had buff. You applied it usually with a nail brush, dipped in water, scrubbed across the top of the Blanco tin to sort of break it down, and then scrub it into the webbing. This required certain skill too, because you could either smarm it on like cement, or you could brush it in as it should be. But that was that weekend, and that was pretty horrendous, really.
What about the brasses? What were you doing?
Well, unfortunately, most of the kit had been in storage for a long while, and most of the brass was green, you know, so it needed a lot of cleaning. Duraglit was recommended, so everyone had got a tin of Duraglit from the Naffy the day before.
And what about cleaning your boots? How far did they go? Because some regiments go to ridiculous extremes for the boots. What were the Norfolks or these things like?
Well, they accepted that your working boots were clean and polished. But we were issued with two pairs of boots, and the other pair of boots were always called your best boots. And we were shown how to, what they call, bull them up.
And how did you do it?
Well, usually with a duster. There are various methods, but the toe caps, usually with a duster, a tin of Kiwi black polish, you usually spat on the duster you formed it around your finger, spat on the duster, rubbed into the polish, and small circles all over the toe cap. And eventually the black went in and the wax came up to the top, you know, and you got like a mirror finish. Some of the lads bald completely, the whole boot, you know, the heels and everything, you know. I always thought that bulling boots was done out of boredom, really, you know. Sitting in the barrack room at night, not much else to do, so they bull the boots, you know. Having sort of done the belt and gaiters for the next day, Blanco'd and cleaned the brasses, and there wasn't really much else to do, so, you know.
What about laying the kit out on the bed? Were they still doing that for
you? We had to lay our kit out on the bed each day. We had to box off our blankets with the pillow on top. But generally, we didn't have to put any of our personal kit on the beds daily. Not what I remember. You just had to have your bed, what should we say, neatly done with your blankets boxed, the sheets boxed, at the end of the bed with the pillow on top. So that was reasonably easy.
What about
really.
The weekly kit inspection? If there was
no, we didn't have any weekly kit inspections. Not then. And in fact, I didn't have a kit inspection until we went into a transit camp at Bury St Edmunds, and we used to have one every day.
So we're looking at a sort of typical day, so, you know, these various sessions and things, and then what would you do in the evening? I mean, besides polishing your boots or whatever, you know?
Well, write to your girlfriend, or write home.
Would you go to the canteen?
Go to the naffy, if you've got any money, yes. And you, if you've got any money, usually on a Thursday when you got paid, you went and had supper. and then you bought enough cigarettes, boot polish and stuff to last the week, and then you usually broke, you know.
So it wasn't a matter of going for a wet canteen, for a couple of pints, it just was out of range.
You could get beer at the canteen, yeah. And bearing in mind the first 6 weeks, we weren't allowed out of camp. Not at all.
So what did the canteen offer?
The naffy? Oh, cooked meals, usually sort of fast food, you know, the usual bacon and stuff, you know.
Was it any better than the proper food? Well, not proper, the food you'd had from the army.
Well, it's better than the canteen food, yes, certainly was, yeah. Because you get tea and beer, you could get all the stuff you needed, your cosmetic stuff, your soap, your toothpaste and stuff like this you could get at the naffy. So you hadn't really any need to go out of the camp.
Were there any sort of games in there, you know, like snooker or billiards or darts?
Darts. I remember darts in that that naffy, but not much else. I can't really remember.
How did you get on with the other lads, the other recruits? Were they from the same sort of background as yourself? What were they like?
Yeah, I suppose they were all from a working background. You were all in the same boat, so you sort of tended to make friends or tried to make friends with the guy in the next bed. These friendships usually lasted the length of the training, and obviously as time went on you got to know the whole room, and those you liked and those you didn't like, because, I mean, this happens, doesn't it?
Was there any trouble or any bullying in your hut? Or
No.
Who stopped it? Was it just that no one did it, or was it stopped?
I can't remember anyone ever doing it, to be honest with you. I can honestly say there was no bullying.
And what about the NCOs? The instructors? What did you think of them? How did they treat you? How good were they? What were they like?
Well, they were better towards the end of the training period. I think as you got to improve, so they sort of seemed to ease off a bit. Lots of shouting and lots of pushing around in the beginning. But again, I think looking back, it was a discipline thing. When you started again, the shape, they eased off.
Was it much swearing in the shouting, or was it, you know?
Oh yeah, they didn't. They didn't sort of mince their words, you know. I mean, no, there was. You accepted that as well, you know. Yeah.
And did you get the feeling that they knew their stuff? I mean, that, you know.
They knew their stuff in that they were going to train you for 6 weeks basic training. Looking back, some of them got sent to the regiments. Some got sent to Korea. They didn't do particularly well, but that's sort of another story. But for what they did, they did quite well.
Did you have much contact with the officers?
No.
One thing I forgot was PT, physical training.
Yes, we used to go to PT.
What types of PT did you do?
Well, we used to go to another area for that, and the PTIs were in the AGTC sort of permanent staff, and rope climbing, wall stuff, general exercises, you know, and
so. Any running?
Yes, yeah. We had to, towards the end of the 6 weeks, we had to do a 5 mile march in an hour, and we had to run somewhere in a certain time. I just forget the running bit, but we used to run. We used to have sort of cross country runs some afternoons and this sort of thing, you know. I never did very well at that either.
Did it improve your fitness? I don't know.
Oh, yes,
fit were you,
yes.
How fit were you when you went in? And how
well, I thought I was fit, but by the time I finished my training, I knew I was fit. I was fit, yeah.
Now, after the, was there any sort of assessment in the first 6 weeks as to what you were doing, or was it just...
Not known to us. Not known to us. I mean, if somebody was highlighted, they weren't told. No.
So what happened at the end of that 6 weeks? That being February, I presume?
Well, you had what they call a passing out parade, which
was...
That was a parade on the Barrett Square. And the RSM trained the parade, if you like, for the big day. And we had a sort of a march past on the actual day, a march past in the band, and some sort of arms drill. And I'll never forget, the RSM said, "I shall stand right at the back, and with my pay stick... You follow the time of my pay stick while I'll do the drill." So, you know, I'm on the slope, he did everything, you know, of course everyone was watching him. So the parade went pretty well, I suppose, for lads that had only been in the army for 6 weeks. You know, I suppose the depth of training was quite good.
And then what happened then?
We then went on to 10 weeks extended training.
And where was that at?
That was at Colchester.
Still at
Mearney. And this training was more advanced. We did more range work, more firing the brain gun rifle. We did more night schemes, stuff like map reading, and generally it was the next step on, you know. After the 10 weeks, I suppose we were considered that we could then join the battalion. And we were sent to Bury St Edmunds, which was a sort of a transit camp.
So this would be, well, April, wouldn't it? Back end of April.
Mm. We're usually an old sergeant coming up for retirement, took us under his wing and... taught us some of the finer things of army life.
Would you be in the barracks at Burris?
Yes. Blenheim.
And how long were you there for?
Well, it would be weeks rather than months, I would guess. We were in a stage where we waiting to join the battalion.